Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Manasubhuja Malayaniyam Ya Kshetragya Etam Nanayet Tamatmani Atmanam Atmanya Varudha Diro Labdo Pashantir Vrameda Kritiyat. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super soul, self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction so that he ceases all other activities. Purport, the functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. When the mind is materialistic or absorbed in material nature, it acts for material advancement of knowledge, destructively ending in discovery of nuclear weapons. When the mind acts under spiritual urge, it acts wonderfully for going back home, back to Godhead, for a life in complete bliss and eternity. Therefore, the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. Perfect intelligence is to render service unto the Lord. One should be intelligent enough to understand that the living being is in all circumstances a servant of the circumstances. Every living being is serving the dictates of desire, anger, lust, delusion, insanity, and enviness, all materially affected. But even while executing such dictations of different temptations, of temperaments, he's perfectly unhappy. He's perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he gets information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Instead of serving materially for the above mentioned different humors of the body, the living entity's intelligence then becomes freed from the unhappy illusion of materialistic temperament, and thus by unalloyed intelligence, the mind is brought into the service of the Lord. The Lord and His service are identical, being on the absolute plane. Therefore, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord, and thus the living entity does not remain a seer himself, but becomes seen by the Lord transcendentally. When the living entity is directly seen by the Lord, the Lord dictates to him to act according to his desire. And when the living entity follows him perfectly, the living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. In his pure unalloyed state, the living being attains the full stage of labdo prashanti and ceases all material hankering.
Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Shapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Taru Gyasta Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasude Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So again, there's different days, different people. So just a little quick review. We saw that in the last chapter, it was a description of the first step in God realization, Sukadeva Goswami is answering Maharaj Prickett's question, what is the duty of a man who's about to die, and what should he not do? So he explains it, but in a very interesting way, because he wants to explain the favorable conditions that one who should meditate, you know, focus his mind on Krishna. So he wants to explain what is the favorable conditions that one should cultivate. For example, like leaving home and the proper sitting place, etc. And in doing this, what happens is the Bhagavatam is so expertly composed that he begins to describe a gradual process of self-realization. He begins to describe a gradual process of self-realization, beginning with meditating on, I would say a gradual process of becoming devotionally oriented, beginning with seeing God's pervasiveness everywhere in a personal way. And then this chapter started with Sukadeva Goswami explaining an example of how Lord Brahma attained perfection in that way by meditating on the Virat Rupa. And then, because he's such an expert preacher, Sukadeva Goswami, so the expert preacher not only tells the of course he's preaching to a man who's about to die. So that's also although it has relevance to everyone, but specifically Maharaj Prickett has 7 days. So an expert preacher not only tells a person what to do, but he tells him what not to do. Just in case he becomes allured to do something else due to a misunderstanding of knowledge. Sometimes we do the wrong things because we don't have the right conception. So therefore he described a little bit about the Vedic knowledge. That sometimes a lot of it is karma kanda. And therefore, people taking to this, they have the wrong aspirations and the wrong desires. And he explains that one should not endeavor for anywhere in this material world, and one should live very, very simply. You should only take the necessities of life, not get entangled. I explained all these things. And the conclusion was, therefore, because there's nothing really in this material world, that shouldn't be our aspiration. When you actually realize that, when you actually become a little bit detached and understand there's nothing to aspire for in this material world, you should search out God, and God is within the heart situated as the super soul. And then there was some descriptions of the super soul, how to meditate on the super soul. And then the last thing that we discussed was the process of meditation. The specific process of meditation. And the points that were stressed in the meditation, that it must be progressive. Because this theme is going to go through the whole chapter, that the meditation has different stages according to your purity and your intelligence. And your purity and your intelligence means your detachment from sense gratification. So according to your level of detachment, then you have a particular level of meditation. And I described before, you can meditate on different, for example, you meditate on the Virat Rupa, you can meditate on the Super Soul, you can meditate on Narayan, you can meditate on Krishna, you can meditate on Kishore Krishna. So there's a progressive stage of meditation according to your qualification in terms of purity and in terms of your nature. And even in your particular meditation, there's a stage of advancement according to your detachment and purity. Even in your study of the Bhagavatam, which is a meditation, it begins from the first cantos. And as you become more qualified, then you can ascend gradually. So this has been described. And now in this next section, what is going to be described, because explain what is the duty of a man who's about to die. So he's going to explain now what happens when one is the contemplate, you know, by this it's going to describe the contemplative yogi, one who has that intelligence fixed. And how the contemplative yogi with his intelligence fixed, how he leaves the body at the time of death. One who has actually become qualified in his meditation. He's meditated on the super soul, and he's actually become purified, and now he's going to leave the planet. Because what is the duty of a man who's about to die? The duty of a man who's about to die is to achieve perfection. So he's going to explain, according to this process, how the perfectional stage actually works gradually. So it's going to be explained here. So what happens at that time of death for one in this process of contemplative meditation? This contemplative meditation on the super soul. So what happens? So the verse begins to describe, and what you'll see all, it begins to describe this process, but what you'll also see is you'll see the commonality in all different processes of perfection, even though the practices are different. The stages that one consciousness goes through is the same. Even in bhakti yoga, even in Krishna consciousness, as you become purified, there's certain things that happen. So here, the first thing is that the yogi, he regulates his mind. If you want to achieve perfection, you have to regulate your mind. So it says niyamya, by regulating mana, the mind. So by regulating the mind, how? Amalaya swabuddhi, by his pure intelligence. So what happens by the yogic process is that one gets great purification. It was described by this gradual meditation, your intelligence becomes purified, you become detached from sense gratification, you can control your mind by the fixed up pure intelligence. Your intelligence becomes pure, and pure intelligence means, as Prabhupada said, that you understand very strongly that you should not take dictation from the material world. The material world, the body is dictating according to false ego, false conception. I am the controller, have this. I am the controller, taste this. I am the controller, see this. I am the controller, do this. The body is dictating. So when the intelligence is fixed, then the mind becomes regulated by that intelligence, by that unalloyed pure intelligence. And for the devotee, the unalloyed pure intelligence that becomes fixed by meditating on the super soul, or even meditating on the Virat Rupa, is not only that I'm not the enjoyer and the controller, but I am the servant of Krishna. This is also Bhagavad Gita says, by the fixed up intelligence. And that's the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita, to fix up our intelligence. In these two ways, I'm not the body, I have nothing to do with this material world. I am the servant of Krishna. So when that happens, then the living entity merges, it says, into the self. Now what it means that he merges into the self, and then the self into the super self. What it means is that he merges into the self by his intelligence, is it means that he becomes so fixed in the service of Krishna that his self is moving according to the desire of Krishna. And that's what bhakti is. When your intelligence becomes completely pure, you begin to move according to Krishna's desire. So it's kind of this, what is the self? When you merge the intelligence into the self, what is the self? The self is a servant of Krishna. So when you merge the pure intelligence into the self, it means your intelligence becomes one with the service of Krishna. And therefore, the self becomes merged into the super self. Because the self then acts purely to serve the desires of the super self or Krishna. So this is the yogis who's become purified and detached. This is how he's like fixing up and controlling his mind and controlling his intelligence. And it's so intense because the intelligence is so pure that his desire and his own self and his own intelligence become one with the desire of the Supreme Lord. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living age entity becomes to the supreme stage of self-satisfaction, labdha prashanti. He contains full bliss, attains full satisfaction. He's in his natural position, and his natural position is to serve Krishna, which we understand means that Krishna's own ladini shakti is flowing through the soul. Krishna's own pleasure potency is flowing through the soul. So one is actually tasting Krishna's pleasure potency. And in that stage, then viramita krityat, he ceases from all other activities. So this is what happens at this moment of death to the yogi. And Prabhupada describes that the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. Perfect intelligence to surrender service unto the Lord. One should be intelligent enough to understand that the living being is in all senses, circumstances, a servant of circumstances. Every living entity is serving the dictates of desire, anger, lust, delusion, and envy. It's all material. This is unintelligent. But while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he is perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he learns about the service of the Lord. So this is the pure intelligence. And then it says, by the unalloyed intelligence, his mind is brought into the service of the Lord. The Lord and his service are identical, being on the absolute plane. Therefore, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord. And thus the living entity does not remain a seer himself, but becomes seen by the Lord transcendentally. He's not independent. He's Krishna's servant and Krishna's instrument. So, because a lot of you are very serious students, I've got so much more out of this verse. I'm just going to tell you the process I'm using now to study. Is what I'm doing is as I'm putting the Sanskrit in the English order. Not all the words, but the main words. So I can, and then I try to read the verse in English by the Sanskrit, because the Sanskrit words are more precise in terms of the meaning. And that's what Prabhupada is understanding it through and translating it through. Then I go in the purport and find where Prabhupada is discussing the words. And I put a number by the word and a number by the point in the purport. And I feel that this is helping me to evolve the inner meaning. Because I realize this verse, I never understood it as carefully as I do now, what all this merging means. But you can see then by Prabhupada's purport how he's clearly explaining what it means. See, because for example, it says it merges his mind, but the word was used as regulating. So the merging has to do with controlling the mind. So anyway, this is a very, I mean, I say it's a very everything I'm finding interesting here. Yatrikalo nimishan para prabhu kito nideva jagatam ya ishare nayatra satvam narajastamascha navaidikaro namahan pradhanam. In that stage of labdho prasanti, so when you attain that stage, so now he's going to describe when this merging happens. There is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the celestial demigods who are empowered to rule over mundane creatures. And what does speak of the demigods themselves? Nor is there the mode of material goodness, nor passion, nor ignorance, nor the false ego, nor the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. This stage of satisfaction. Now, again, by putting it in the Sanskrit order, then you see that if there's no influence of the devastating time, then you see that the word is kala. And because I've been studying the Bhagavatam now from the first canto, then in my mind comes all the times where that word kala has been described. So I already have a whole philosophical reference to that word kala, because it's described in so kala. What does kala mean? Kala means time. And exactly what time is described as is this: the super soul is witnessing your activities. And then, according to your activities, the super soul moves matter around you for your enlightenment and your perfection. Therefore, kala is a representation of the super soul. So, and that matter is moving by time. So we all see different things happen to us. Different things get taken away, different things get given to us, different people say things, they say good things, they say bad things. Everything happens around us. We have a house, we lose a house. You know, we get this, we lose this. So it's all happening according to the direction of Super Soul, who sees what's in your heart and therefore is moving matter perfectly for our enlightenment, providing we have the transcendental knowledge to understand that it's Krishna, and therefore try to understand what the movement of matter means in terms of what we should be thinking and doing according to Krishna's will. So it moves perfectly for our enlightenment. But moving perfectly for our enlightenment also means suffering. Because we're attached to being the controller, and it's not moving according to our desire to be the controller. Moving according to the desire to purify us from that desire to be the controller. So therefore, we suffer because we're attached to being the controller and enjoyer, and the world is not moving for that around us. So therefore, we're suffering. We're suffering death, which is not according to our desire. Old age is not according to our desire to be the enjoyer and controller. Disease, humiliation, legal problems, political problems. It's all not moving for that. It's moving mercifully, completely directed to our particular attachments in the soul and to root them out. Perfectly it's moving to give us the proper conceptions and understandings. But in the stage of self-satisfaction where you purely want to be Krishna's servant, then you don't need to be in the atmosphere of time, because you don't need to be purified. You don't need to have your environment transform to root out your attachments. And that is labdho prashanti. That is the stage of supreme satisfaction. This is the stage of the supreme satisfaction. So there, a devastating time, and it also controls the celestial demigods, does not act on the transcendental plane. The influence of time is exhibited by the symptoms of birth, death, disease, and old age, and these four principles, which are present everywhere in the universe, up to Brahma, they're not there. And the astronomical influences directed by the different demigods over mundane creatures is also conspicuous by its absence, because the demigods are in connection with the super soul to move matter around you. It's all connected. And that's what astrology does, basically, is according to your past activities and desires, then Krishna is going to move matter around you in your life to uproot your material conditioning that you got from your last life. So he's moving matter perfectly around you, and therefore, he does that through the planets, which exert different influences on matter at different times, according So it can be read from your birth how that process of purification is going to go, and therefore the astrologer can predict. This is going to happen, that's going to happen. And therefore, even when you become a devotee and you surrender to Krishna, then we see that it moves basically the same way. Even though you're free from that influence because you're directly under Krishna, but Krishna generally uses that influence, because even if you surrender to him, you still have those rooted attachments that came from your birth. And matter moving them is going to, and the movement of matter is going to help you to purify them. But the difference is that if you're a devotee and you have transcendental realization, then your destiny really becomes different. For example, let's say I'm a sannyasi. Okay, so if you look at my chart, it may look under romance, and it may say that it's completely debilitated. You know, so in this life, you know, I won't be with beautiful women. So if I was a materialist, then what would my fate be? Everyone would be looking down on me. They'd feel sorry. My mother would be calling me up. What's wrong? You know, you'd feel like a social outcast. But if you surrender to Krishna, then you're a sannyasi. You're on the top of society. It's completely a great situation for your aspirations, and because there's free will and there's destiny. Destiny is what happens to you. Free will is how you react. I often think there's one devotee here, Bhuvaneshwar. You know, I can see how he conquered his karma, because you know, his physical condition is, you know, very difficult. So normally in the material world, with that kind of physical condition, you know, we'd be all just suffering. But because he's just Krishna Balaram's cook, yeah, I see he's a very highly respected person in society, because he's turned to Krishna. So those things, you actually conquer your Parabdha karma. Parabdha karma is the karma that's fully manifest. It's very hard to change that karma because it means your body. So you completely transcend it by taking to the spiritual path. Prabhupada therefore said we have a material and spiritual destiny. When we give up our attachments ourselves and surrender to Krishna, then we see that everything that moves around us is favorable. As one great Vaishnava philosopher said, the environment is friendly when you actually develop this spiritual consciousness. So these influences are not there. Then this is the world where it's not necessary. And therefore, nor Raja, Tamas, Vikara. Vikara means transformation of matter. In 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, one of the characteristics of Prakriti, Arjuna asks, what is the character? It's Vikara. Matter is always changing. Vikara is not there in the spiritual world. There's no matter. And the substance is Vastu. The substance is the Vastu, or the substance, is the absolute truth. Therefore, it doesn't change. You have a house. It doesn't, you know, deteriorate. You have a body. It doesn't deteriorate. There's no Vikara there. And therefore, obviously, there's no false ego. There's no mahat, the material causal ocean. There's no pradhan, the nature. So this is all described here in the thing. All this, the transcendental state, pure. There's no false ego, no material creation. And the devotees experience the above-mentioned state affairs by attainment of spiritual forms for activity and transcendental loving service. So the devotee experiences this by getting his eternal nature with Krishna, not by just merging and annihilating everything. Param padam vaishnavam atmananti tad yaneti neti yatad utsurekshava Visrajyadoratmyam ananya saurada vidopaguyaha padam pade pade. The transcendentalist's desire to avoid everything godless For they know that supreme situation in which everything is related with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities, but worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them into his heart. So that the real transcendentalist doesn't attain this state of labdo prashanti by merging, but by becoming devotee. So it's very interesting how it's described. Again, it says the transcendentalists, they try to avoid everything godless. For they know what? They know that parampadam, the supreme destination, that is what? Vaishnavam, which is in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because this is an ananya suryada, and Prabhupada mentions that word in the purport too, he says, pure devotees is in absolute harmony with the personality of God. In other words, they think of the Lord as their only dependable friend and well-wisher. So because the pure devotee, that word also, suryada, means a good friend, ananya. They're absolutely, there's nothing else but the Lord's friendship and dependence on him. That word, Sodayada. It's also in Narada Muni uses the same word when he describes how a brahmachari should live in firm friendship with the spiritual master. So therefore, the transcendentalists who know that supreme situation, where everything is in relationship with Krishna, and who are in this mood of deep friendship for Krishna, seeing him as their well-wisher, for them, Prabhupada uses this word is dauratmyam. There is no perplexities, there's no dualities, there's no confusions. But padam arha, they worship the lotus feet of the Lord and take those lotus feet of the Lord, hridha upaguya, take them very, very deep into their heart. Per day, at every moment. So this is what the transcendentalist does. he has such a relationship with Krishna and sees him as his well-wisher, his benefactor. And he worships those feet deeply within the heart. Every moment. So Prabhupada said, such pure devotees, being perfectly directed by the Supreme Lord, do not create any artificial perplexity in the matter of transcendental understanding by wasting time in discussing what is Brahman, what is not Brahmana Maya, nor they falsely think of themselves as one with the Lord, or argue that there is no existence of the Lord separately, or there is no God at all, or that the living beings are themselves God, or that with God incarnate, they don't get confused. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, they wrongly manufacture their own way of devotional service by open debauchery and mislead others who are simpletons or debauchees like themselves. All these non-devotees and debauchees are, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, duratmas, or crooked souls in the dress of mahatmas or great souls. Such non-devotees and debauchees are completely excluded from the list of transcendentalists by the presentation of this verse, Vishwanath said. Because he said the transcendentalists, they know everything in relationship with Krishna, they have him in his heart. These are transcendentalists. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has taken from the list of transcendentalists all those who are not devotees. A pure devotee of the Lord no longer wastes time in discriminating Brahman from non-Brahman, because he knows perfectly well that the Lord, Parabrahman, by his Brahman energy is interwoven in anything, and thus everything is looked upon by a devotee as the property of the Lord. The devotee tries to engage everything in his service and does not create perplexities by falsely lording it over the creation. Itam munistu parame japastito vigyanadrigvirya sarandita saya saparsh
Ninaptibhya gudam tato nilam saneshu satsu namaye titaklama.
By the strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization and thus be able to extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole through which stool is evacuated with the heel of one's foot and by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. So by the strength of scientific knowledge, it says vijnana vrik. By scientific knowledge, via strength, the philosopher, well situated in this realization, then he's able to give up the material body. He's situated in this absolute realization, and then jita klama, he's able to extinguish all material desires. So this is the qualification for elevating one in spiritual life. You have to be fixed in your realization, and by the strength of being fixed in realization, you're free from material desires, and therefore one is able to give up this material body. And then he describes it's actually a mechanical process of achieving self-realization. So it's described by blocking the air hole by which stool is evacuated, and then lifting the life air from one to another in six primary places. So this seems like this yoga mishra bhakti is described in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which has to deal with meditation on the supersoul and contemplative meditation, satchakra yoga. So, and again, the same point that Prabhupada's going to stress, there are many dharatmas who claim to have realized themselves as Brahman and are yet unable to conquer material desires. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly explained that an absolutely self-realized soul becomes completely aloof from all material desires. Material desires are based on the false ego. So one becomes completely free. It says, such a self-realized soul ceases to exhibit his useless activities, attempting to lord over material nature, being scientifically well-informed. He engages himself in the service of the Lord. And then Prabhupada says, controlling the life air by prescribed yogic process is mechanical, and the practice is more or less a physical endeavor for spiritual perfection. In olden days, such practice was very common for the transcendentalists, for the mode of life and character in those days was favorable. But in modern days, when the influence of Kali Yuga is so disturbing, practically everyone is untrained in this art of bodily exercise. Concentration of the mind is more easily attained in these days by chanting of the holy name of the Lord. The results are more effective. So now he's going to describe how he pushes the life air. The meditative devotee. The word here is, in the next verse is manasvi. The meditative devotee. Contemplative meditation. This is, he's describing and analyzing in detail how one achieves perfection in this process. Because Maharaj Prickett wanted to know how to go back to Godhead. Well, here is the mechanical method of going back to Godhead. By using the body and the life airs and the intelligence and the mind and then fixing them up, then ascending to perfection.
Nabhyam stitam rid yadi ropyatasmad udana gatto adana katyorasitam nayanmani tatona sandaya diyamanasvi svatalamulam shanakarnayeti.
The meditative devotee should slowly push up the life air from the navel to the heart, from there to the chest, and from there to the root of the palate. He should search out the proper places with the intelligence. So dia, by the intelligence, anusandhaya, he searches out. So by controlling the life air, one could kind of search out with the life airs, with the intelligence. I guess you can see the different chakras in the body, and then how to bring this soul through the different chakras. Yes.
Does he recommend this mechanical process? Does he recommend it for us?
No.
He has not.
No. It's not being recommended.
He has only described it.
He's described it because Maharaj Parikit had asked, what is the duty of a man is about to die? He described the favorable conditions, which are recommended for us. We have to have asana, we have to be clean, we have to leave home. And then he described how to purify the mind, and then he described there's different alternatives, how you can perfect yourself.
According to my frame of mind, I have to keep myself in the
way. Yes. But he's describing the different alternatives. But he's describing them for two reasons. One, to show the elements in these alternatives that are relevant for us in bhakti yoga. Like we can see there's relevance to this process. And also to reject them so that we don't become confused and take to them.
We have the freedom to reject them.
Yes.
If it does not suit us.
Well, we're not even going to take to them. And neither is Maharaj Parikit, and it'll become very clear by Sukadeva Goswami's instruction that these processes are not for him. There are six circles of the movement of life there, and the intelligent bhakti yoga yogi should search out these places with intelligence and in a meditative mood. So it describes the different chakras in the body. You have to search them out. I'm not realizing this, so I'm not so understanding. Mother Gandharvika, you have anything to say? Is everything clear? Mm-hmm. Verses? Okay. Tasmad bhuvor antaram unayeta naruda sapta yatano napeksha stitva muhurtardam makunta jistir Nabidya Murdham Visvijait Param Vita. Okay. So thereafter, the bhakti yogi should push the life air up between the eyebrows. And then, blocking the seven outlets of the life air, he should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. He should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he then should reach the cerebral hole and give up his material connections, having gone to the Supreme. The Prabhupada in the purport says, the process of giving up material connections and returning home, back to Godhead, the Supreme, is recommended here. The condition is that one should be completely freed from the desire for material enjoyment. So there's always two things that are given here. One is you have to have the right aim. You have to have the right aspiration. It's described here as a kunta dristi, one who is targeted for going back home. You have to have that right goal. And then at the same sense, with the right goal, you have to have the detachment. There's always required knowledge and detachment. You have to know what to do and want to do it, and you have to be able to do it. Without knowledge, you don't know what to do. Without detachment, you can't do it. So this determination is required. And anapeksha, independent of all material enjoyment. So you have to have the right aim, and then you have to have independent of all material enjoyment. Anapeksha means completely detached. So Prabhupada also explains that. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's said that this sort of material detachment is possible to attain when one is acquainted with the supreme association of life, param jisvar navartate. One cannot be freed from material attraction unless he has complete understanding of the nature of spiritual life. So again, param drishti, you have to have that goal. When you have that goal, then you can become detached. So you have to have the swabuddhi, the fixed up intelligence, and then you have to regulate the senses. So you have to have the buddhi and the dhriti. You have to have the buddhi and the intelligence, and you have to have the dhriti or the determination. Without the determination and attachment, you may have the objective, but you cannot proceed to the next step. You have to have that determination. Such lesser-paled persons cannot have connection of Param, as mentioned in this verse, and cannot reach the Supreme. If you have the wrong conception, Brahman, you can't achieve the Param, which is mentioned in this verse as Akunta Dristi. Oh no, Paramgata. Paramgata. Having gone to the Paramgata, the supreme goal. You can't get that supreme goal unless you have the right conception. And therefore Prabhupada said, the devotees have full knowledge of the spiritual world, the personality of Godhead and his transcendental association, and unlimited spiritual planets called Vaikuntha Lokas. Herein, Akunti Dristi is mentioned. Akunti and Vaikuntha convey the same import. And only one who has fixed his aim upon that spiritual world and personal association with Godhead can give up his material connections even while living in the material world. So Prabhupada is presenting everything clearly. So you can see how these themes run through. That detachment has to have that fixed up goal. And we'll become detached when we have a fixed up goal to attain our eternal relationship with Krishna. Then we'll be able to give up the obstacles of the anarthas on the way. Yes. He mentions what? Well, because in the previous... Yeah. And also, it was mentioned in the previous verse, one of the verses in chapter, you know. We can find it tomorrow, but... Yeah. I guess Akunta Dristi. If he has his aim for going back to God, it won't say the Param, having gone to the Param, the Supreme. Yes, very good. And therefore, he can achieve. One who goes to the Param Dham does not enter the return to the material world. The Param and the Param Dham are mentioned several places in the Bhagavad Gita. The Prabhupada is referring to the Bhagavad Gita.